Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are chatting with Justin Hune, founder and publisher of the Uranium Insider. Now, as it says, Uranium Insider, we are going to be chatting uranium sector here with Justin. Don't worry, everybody, we will be getting into the stocks, which have a lot of them pulled back fairly significantly from some of their highs, but still, boy oh boy, if you're in uranium stocks this year, you've done better than, well, a lot of other resource sectors being in those stocks. Justin, let's start with a bit more of the macro side of things. When it comes to supply and demand, I keep hearing that on the demand side, some of the consumers of the uranium are going to have to start pulling the trigger and start signing some higher price agreements, all these aspects, but they still seem to be holding back, I guess, as much as they can. We know this year, the Sprott Fund that came in and bought up a lot of this uranium really helped drive some more interest into the sector. Give us an update where you see this supply and demand balance for uranium, please.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. And good to be with you guys again. the supply and demand balance is pretty imbalanced, and it's going to be that way for a number of years, really. There's a chance that we get out to a point in time where we see an actual structural balance of supply and demand. That's likely not to happen, at least until 2024, 2025, with the assumption of the McArthur River mine coming back online, Paladin's Langerheinrich coming back online, and perhaps some increased production from the Uzbeks and a couple of other Russian mines as well. So, but for now, what we're seeing is a severely undersupplied market in terms of like a structural snapshot of supply and demand. So we have what one of the prominent nuclear fuel consultants, UxC, they came out saying that they expect the demand for uranium in 2022 to be 200 million pounds. And so that's significantly higher than what the consensus numbers really have been. And that's more along the lines of 185 million in that ballpark. And what they're considering is not only some inventory restocking by certain utilities, especially some of the utilities in the states who had reactors they expected to shut down that ended up getting support and life extensions, but also with initial core loads for some new reactors coming online globally in the 2022 calendar year. So you're looking at a 200 million demand for 2022 for uranium, and you're looking at a supply of about 135 million pounds produced. Now, of course, you have some secondary supply, which they will model out at about 25 million pounds, but their secondary supply actually includes inventory drawdowns. In other words, pounds that have already been counted before. We don't count that as secondary supply when we do our modeling. So the secondary that we count is coming from underfeeding and tails re-enrichment during the enrichment process when there's excess capacity in the enrichment centrifuges. You actually can utilize that excess capacity to spin the UF6 down to a lower tails assay, meaning you need less UF6 fed into the centrifuges. And you also have that excess capacity to spin those tails and extract more uranium or extract more enriched uranium out of the tails material. So both of those processes happen at the enrichment facilities. However, when there's increasing demand for enrichment, secondary supply dwindles. So we look at secondary from underfeeding and tails re-enrichment at about 15 million pounds a year. So that brings us for 2022 to about 150 million pounds of primary production plus secondary supply. That's a 50 million pound supply deficit for 2022 alone. We know that McArthur River will not be back up and running by 2023. And if they decide in the next, let's say, 6 months to bring it back online, that restart process takes 12 months. And then the first year's production is only 4 million pounds. So we're looking at a severely undersupplied market for 2022 and 2023. Combine all of that with the fact that financials have stepped up to the plate in 2021. And it's been relatively quiet for the past 3 or 4 weeks because that primary financial player, the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, has been consistently trading at a discount to their net asset value. It's only a matter of time before institutional capital comes back into the space, back into that vehicle, back into the ETFs. One of those, URNM, will be taken over by Sprott in Q1 of next year. So it's really just a strong setup for a market to be, I don't want to say squeezed, I don't want to say manipulated, but for a market where financials can come in a big way and actually physically move the price of uranium and therefore the equities.
Absolutely, Justin. There's a lot of interesting headwinds and tailwinds that simultaneously in the supply side of the equation. And another thing is just taking a step back at the macro picture, looking at nuclear energy, and does it have a seat at the table for the future of the planet? We just had these big energy conferences at the COP26, really focused on green energy, empowering the future, and a lot of nations making commitments and what they were going to do. And it was interesting to see how things have changed over time. There was a lot more bullish sentiment towards the nuclear sector, people realizing it needed to be part of the mix, because if we just go to wind and solar, you're putting a lot of areas at risk of having to use backup power with oil, nat gas, coal. And if people want to phase out coal, if they want to reduce fossil fuels, you know, nuclear power is the only 24/7 baseload energy that's available that's still green and carbon free. So do you see that changing the overall view of nuclear on the global stage? And how do you think some of the commitments on new reactor builds play into the macro picture?
Well, it seems like in the past few years, any new reactor builds were either coming from countries that either were bucking the trend and the overall negative sentiment in the West for nuclear, and just basing it on their need for consistent baseload power, not even necessarily a climate consideration or an emissions consideration. That was kind of one side of the thing in the West, let's say Europe. And then you have the East, which is just doing what they're doing. And they, you know, specifically we're talking about China, and secondarily, I would say India having a lot of buildouts as well. And China, you know, not only is recognizing the necessity of having cleaner energy production with having major air pollution issues, but at the same time, they're building coal plants like crazy. They're building what is a new coal plant every week. So it's not like they're abandoning coal and going nuclear. They are going all out industrialization. They're going all out growth. They're going all out domination in the energy and industrial spaces. And nuclear is a clear answer for them. It's consistent. It's baseload. It's reliable. And the fuel can be acquired and stored in a relatively small area. You can hold decades and decades of fuel to power nuclear reactors in a single large warehouse. It's something that is very advantageous for a country like China that wants that energy security. So but the green, the quote unquote green implications are really huge here, especially for the West. You know, China is going to do what China's going to do. They couldn't care less about whether something is green or not. But, you know, they might tell you that, but really, in reality, they're just going to do what they're going to do. In the West, we have politics that are attached at the hip to I don't want to call it virtue signaling, but expressing a need to look at environmental issues and to take them seriously, because there's a huge portion of the population that cares deeply about this. And whether that's the focus tends to be on the climate, on quote unquote climate change, on carbon emissions, things like that, rather than actual pollution of the environment or some other issues that seem to be mostly just glossed over in the myopia of climate change. However, clearly this is a trend. It's so much of a trend that what we're actually seeing the EU consider inclusion for nuclear in the taxonomy, in the green taxonomy. That decision was supposed to be coming out this week. It's looking like it's likely to be delayed. However, it is looking positive for nuclear. There are some serious political implications of inclusion or exclusion of nuclear. Seems like the compromise that's being made now is a lumping together of nuclear and gas as both potentially being included in the EU taxonomy. With all of that said, it's definitely with COP26, there's been more and more recognition of nuclear as a clear choice for clean baseload energy. And it's about time, right? I mean, it's like anybody who can think about this logically could see this a decade ago or longer. But finally, the climate alarmists are like, okay, well, if we're going to be absolute alarmists about what's going on with climate and think that and say that carbon is the number one threat to humanity, well, you can't say that and also exclude the primary source of carbon-free baseload power. You can't have both. And so it does finally seem like the environmental left is coming around in support of nuclear. And in my opinion, going forward, especially if we see inclusion in the EU taxonomy, which I believe we will, you know, it's only going to make inclusion of nuclear in a number of countries' grids and the proposal for new builds more and more likely. There's just going to be a kind of a wave of support that's steadily growing. It's already happening, but it seems to be gaining speed here, and that bodes well for nuclear, especially out towards the second half of the decade.
So Justin, let's talk about the stocks then, because the stocks, as I mentioned on the onset, have still done very well this year, but they've definitely come back from some of their highs. And quite frankly, the environment for uranium stocks was everything, was moving higher. As long as you had a uranium asset or even uranium in your name, you got a bump on the back of just this better interest in the uranium sector. Where do you see the stocks going from here?
I think that this correction has been mostly a pretty healthy correction. Most of the stocks in the space are still kind of hovering right around that rising 200-day moving average. So, you know, without a further technical breakdown through that 200-day moving average for most stocks, and some of them have broken through, some of them are still hovering above it. Without that further technical breakdown, this does look technically like a bull market pullback. That's still what we're looking at from a technical basis. From a fundamental basis, it's interesting. It's like I'm getting that feeling again where I'm kind of a contrarian again. And I was kind of missing that feeling August, September, October, even into the first half of November a little bit, because things do look so unbelievably positive for nuclear and for uranium that you sort of get that feeling when you're up so big that, you know, it's euphoric. You feel great about your investments. You feel great about your decisions to take positions previously in the year or in previous years. But at the same time, it's almost like, gosh, I kind of wish we had another chance to increase our positions and another chance for newcomers to the space to get good entries into the space. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. And so really what I'm seeing currently is, year to date, we're still up really big. We're up over 100% year to date portfolio wide. Which is a fantastic year, right? But what I think is happening here is we're seeing obviously broad market jitters. Broad market seems to be a little bit nervous about COVID and nervous about, you know, the infrastructure bill, you know, getting the kibosh in the States. And we're seeing kind of just a weak broad market and sort of some nerves coming into the market that's affecting uranium. We're also seeing what we believe is, you know, there's been a lot of institutions that have taken large positions last December, January, February, and are up huge in the year, maybe just booking some gains to put on the book solid for the year 2021. And then we're just seeing retail kind of shaky and not really sure yet that the bottom is in. So I think what I'd like to see here is sort of a bottoming process. I'd like to see some consolidation, a bit of sideways chop, form a bit of a base here. And that'll give the new year 2021 a nice fresh start for new money to come into the space. And that's what we're betting on.
Well, Justin, it was interesting to see the run up from 2020 into 2021, where the stocks were really leading the metal price higher. I mean, they were sniffing out that prices were going to rise. They knew that these physical funds were going to have an effect, as were, if you remember, the companies that were non-producers that were also buying up uranium in the spot market. So most people could see the writing on the wall and the stocks move first. Do you think, as far as this bottoming process, that we'll see something similar where the stocks will start moving higher and rebound after now correcting most of them 20 to 40%, which is a sizable correction? There's a lot of retail that you mentioned that got in at the end of that, and then they've now maybe got too excited and are bag holders. Do you think that the funds that you mentioned coming in and some of this bigger money will start moving the stocks higher first, or do we need to see the spot price start moving higher for the stocks to respond?
I think it'll probably happen in conjunction, especially if it's institutional money. I think that the institutional players at this point understand the thesis here. And the thesis essentially is, especially for larger players, position the ETFs, position in the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust. Going in hard into the spot vehicle will actually physically move the price of uranium. And the reason that we believe that so solidly is, A, we've already seen that happen multiple times in this past 6 months or so. And B, the spot market is so thin that when Sprott's out of the market, the price is not moving. The utilities are not even in the spot market currently. And they understand how thin it is. They understand that any buying that's happening in the spot market is going to move the price up, which is why they're staying out. And so basically, the players in the spot market are going to be traders in the financials. And so I think that the next move up is going to come kind of in conjunction with that. And that's a bit different than we had. We didn't have the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust last December. So we just had kind of a ripe setup for an energy play, for a contrarian play. And we had players like Bear Traps Report, Larry McDonald, right in their Bear Traps Report in December of last year, basically showing the thesis and setting on that. That was the beginning of institutional money coming into the space, but we didn't yet have a vehicle in play where money going into that vehicle literally did move the physical price of uranium. Now we have that. And so I think that, especially with the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust being a major holding in the URNM ETF, that we will see those flows come into both, and we'll see the price of uranium move along with the stocks.
Yeah, very encouraging to see some other people taking part in this uranium run and some bigger money also coming in, because Sprott really kicked it off. That was really the driver in 2021 and now 2022. Let's see who else comes to the table, who the buyers are, and if that underlying uranium price can take another step and another leg higher. But hey, Justin, it's been great chatting with you throughout this year. I really appreciate the work that you do in the uranium sector for all those uranium investors. And let's hope there is another leg higher for the stocks, just so it's not those ones late to the party recently that are going to get burned, because we all know that that can leave some pretty bitter taste in the retail individual trader's mouth. Justin, as always, man, great chatting with you. I hope you have a great rest of your year. We'll chat again in the new year. Very Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Thanks so much. Same to you, Corey.